This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, how drones and technology are changing the world of movie making. But first, while the negative effects on kids who play video games are widely known, recent research says wait a minute before you assume that video games can make players lazy or maladjusted. An American Psychological Association study shows they may provide learning, health, and even social benefits. And joining us to talk about the potential benefits of video games, University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor in Instructional Design and Technology in the College of Education, Criminal Justice, and Human Services, Dr. Matthew Schmidt, Miami University Professor in the College of Education, Health, and Society, and the Armstrong Institute for Interactive Media Studies, Dr. Bob DeShooter, and Smale Center and an Armstrong Institute for Interactive Media Studies instructor at Miami University, Eric Hodgson. We can't take calls during this segment, but you can still join us by emailing your questions and comments to talk@wvxu.org or by finding us on Facebook or Twitter. And Bob, Eric, and Matt, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for having us. Good to be here.
Eric, you know, the common view has been that video games have a lot of negative effects, but as more research is being done, the positive aspects are starting to come to light more and more. And what are some of these potential benefits from video games?
Well, I will start out by saying I am a psychologist, but I am not that kind of psychologist. So I'll give my personal opinion on this. There is a lot of research out there, like you said, and some of it is very mixed. You know, there is some that kind of lean towards the, you know, violence in video games, and there is some that leans towards this helps kids get it out of their system, or, you know, it's a healthy outlet for trying and exploring. And it should be noted, there's a lot of games that really aren't geared towards violence, or, you know, go drive a race car or go solve a puzzle. And it can be a very healthy expression for kids to get into the games.
What are some of the potential benefits in terms of learning?
Well, I'll take that one. Well, there are a lot of things that you can learn from playing games. I think personally, what I find the most fascinating one is games are online these days. Games are a social activity that you partake in, so kids learn to play along with larger communities of people. You have to share the same goals. You have to achieve common goals. You learn to collaborate. I think those are very valuable things that kids will learn from playing video games. You know, there are games that are made to teach certain facts and certain content just as well. But from the research that's out there, I'd say the most interesting thing that you could do with video games is learning by doing, learning through experience, which, you know, goes back to things that John Dewey was talking about, educational reformer. So, you know, video games are all about learning by overcoming problems, by collaborating with other people, and they can be strong social learning environments. And I think that's where video games really shine in.
I'd agree there. I think problem solving is a big one. You know, logic, cause and effect. Like Bob mentioned, content. I know my little third grader loves his math games and just sitting down to do math problems all day. But you know, there's that changes with age. We'll see. But you know, even simple things like, you know, watching a young child get a little concept of physics from Angry Birds. You know, I think there's a lot you can pick up from learning through games and finding things and overcoming problems.
Yeah, that's something I never thought of before. Physics from Angry Birds.
It may not be the most accurate physics, but it's pointed in the right direction.
Matt, did you want to weigh in?
Sure. You know, I mean, I think that video games definitely can help teach skills, but, you know, beyond what happens inside of a video game, there's a phenomenon known as the metagame that happens outside of a video game, where when players get really involved in a game and they get really interested in it, then they kind of go beyond the game itself and they start learning how they can mod the game. They start learning about the internals of the game, the rule sets, the structures and the mechanics, and they begin interacting in a social way that goes far, far beyond just the simple rule set that happens inside of the game. And all of a sudden, they're engaging in these really interesting communities outside of the game where they're engaging in 21st century skills like problem solving and collaboration and community building and whatnot. We see that in games like Minecraft and World of Warcraft and a number of other games.
I think that's a really interesting point to make, actually. I mean, our society is no longer as dependent on just rote memorization and memorizing all these facts because, you know, we've got the internet. You can just look things up. The skill sets that are more valued these days, I would argue, are things like problem solving, higher order thinking, making connections between different bits of information. And like Matt was saying, you know, in video games, you practice these things over and over, and that's what makes them a valuable tool for learning from my perspective. That's what really makes me interested in this topic.
So, Bob, these are actually helping you increase your cognitive abilities, your reasoning abilities?
Yeah, to some extent. Of course, it always depends from what game that you are playing, what you're working with. The effects are not always going to be the same for every person. It's fairly difficult research in the same way that it's very difficult to just say, you know, we see that video games make people violent or aggressive. There's this whole context that surrounds people that all influence how people interact with these media and, you know, the predispositions that people have towards playing these things. But in general, there are plenty of examples of how digital games can have a positive effect on people.
Can't take calls during this segment, but you can still email your questions and comments to talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. One of the common views, too, Matt, of video games is that they're intellectually lazy. Does all the research, does that put that to rest?
Well, you know, I don't think that it's as simple as do video games make people lazy or do they make people smart? The answer is, of course, it depends on context and disposition and so on. But whether video games are able to teach, I don't think that the jury's out on that. It's fairly mm-hmm. clear that video games can teach, and they can teach skills. They can teach problem solving. There's a number of things that happen, both explicitly and implicitly. And, you know, in terms of laziness, yeah, absolutely. You can have a kid who's sitting around all summer in front of his Xbox not going outside, because there's no question that these are very, very motivating environments, and that when you sit down in front of them, there's a lot of research that goes into the behavioral principles that keep people playing. So when you complete a small task, you're going to be rewarded for it, and that kind of motivates you to continue and to continue. And unless you have some sort of structures in place that allow for the player to know when it's time to stop, then you can have kind of these obsessive traits emerge.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point as well. I mean, doing anything excessively is never good for a person, obviously. I believe Jane McGonigal, a well-known author and a researcher, she has been quoted a couple of times saying that if you consider all the research out there, that there's a certain amount of time that you want to play video games per day to get a positive effect from mm-hmm. it. I believe it might be 3 hours a day or something, but I might be wrong about that number, but I believe it's something like that. And obviously, you know, if you're playing all day every day for 12 hours on end, that's not going to be healthy in the same way, you know, that wouldn't be healthy to do other activities, you know, without doing anything else in your life. Imagine doing sports for 12 hours a day without any rest, for example.
So I think, Matt, you would say it's like everything else, moderation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, I've got a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old, and they love the iPad. But you definitely, if my wife and I weren't to put some sort of a structure there to limit their time on the iPad, then they would probably be on it, you know, from dusk till dawn.
You know, earlier the we were talking about social skills, and one of the common views, again, is that playing video games leads to social isolation. So how much of a problem is that? I guess, again, it goes back to the idea that you just have to be careful and if it's in moderation and you're not isolating yourself, you're getting out and being a part of maybe a group that plays these games, and that would be a good thing.
I'd say the trend right now, excuse me, is really in the opposite direction in gaming. I mean, so much of gaming is multiplayer these days, and you know, you look at things like World of Warcraft guilds, where you have people spread out all over the globe who come together to go on a, you know, a dungeon raid for 2 hours every evening, right? Like, it's actually, in many ways, games bring people together into community, and you can meet people through the games that you wouldn't otherwise, and have things in common and interests in common. And you know, there's actually I love first-person gaming. You know, single-player gaming is actually very hard these days to find single-player games because they are so socially engaging.
Yeah, I don't think that I would agree that games are socially isolating in the least. In fact, it's just a different way of socializing. When you see a person sitting alone at a computer playing a game, or sitting alone in front of their TV playing a game, they're actually engaged in a very rich social experience. So some of my background is working with students on the autism spectrum. And these students typically have challenges with being social. But when you allow them to be social in a different way, they can be social online, they can be social in this immersive environment, that then allows them to be social in a way that's much safer, allows them to take risks and to try new social skills that they wouldn't be able to do in the physical world, where they run risks of being bullied or having, you know, undesirable ramifications for their behaviors.
Yeah, so it sounds like there are opportunities for kids to benefit socially.
Absolutely.
I guess the flip side of that coin is, you know, there's always an opportunity cost of, if you're socializing with people across the internet or on the other side of a game server, obviously you're not also socializing with people in your local environment, and you may be sitting in front of a computer by yourself. So, you know, there are always those social trade-offs of socializing with person A and ignoring person B. So, you know, again, moderation in all things. You do want to make sure you're not neglecting your, you know, real life in the flesh counterparts here.
And obviously, you know, it's whenever people are interacting with each other in a social environment, there's always going to be behavior that you don't really want. And the same thing we see with video games online is similar to just having chat rooms online. It's not that if you're playing a video game that there won't people, you know, be who are cursing or who are bullying other people online even. So, I mean, it is a social environment just like a playground could be. So mm-hmm. If there's bullying on a playground, you can find those things online as well. So it's not, you know, there's always a flip side to the coin as well. And typically when these questions are asked by the general public, do video games lead to social isolation? It's a really difficult question to answer. We can say it's not as extreme that it will lead to social isolation, but the social benefits are not just benefits. It's always there's always this gray area, which makes it really difficult. Well, at least you have to give a nuanced answer to a question like that, I would argue.
We will continue our conversation. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon, as we look at learning, health, and social benefits of video games, University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor in Instructional Design and Technology in the College of Education, Criminal Justice, and Human Services, Dr. Matthew Schmidt. Miami University Professor in the College of Education, Health, and Society and the Armstrong Institute for Interactive Media Studies, Dr. Bob DeShooter, and Smale Center Director and an Armstrong Institute for Interactive Media Studies Instructor at Miami University, Eric Hodgson. We are not able to take your calls during this segment, but you can still be part of the conversation by emailing talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And we had a question come in from Jeff, and he says his six-year-old loves gaming. So he wondered if there are opportunities for kids in testing games and helping develop games. Anybody want to field that one?
Certainly. Yeah, I'll take a stab at it. I think certainly, you know, as far as helping to say, test games or make a game better. You know, there are beta programs, especially with the Steam store that you can get into to help test games before they're released and offer feedback. And, man, I wish you could do this and this, and, you know, actually give direct feedback to the developers. There are also many ways to, you know, learn game development yourself, and maybe Bob can speak more to some of those tools because he teaches those things. But also, I would say the modding community, you know, take an existing game. I know, like, the Skyrim, Oblivion, a lot of the Bethesda games come with mod kits where you can take a game and build your stuff on top of it, or change the game and modify the game. And a lot of times that's a really good way for younger people to get into game development without having to write an entire game from scratch.
Yeah. To follow up with what Eric was saying, so for younger kids these days who want to make their own video game, I'd recommend looking into GameStar Mechanic, which is, we can just Google it online, which is a very low entry to start making your first games. For kids that are a little bit older than 6 years old, Game Maker by Yovo Studios is very awesome software that you can use for free and start making your first game. And if you want to make something 3D, Unity 3D is freely available for people to just tinker around with. And the last two of those names that I mentioned are actually tools that professional game developers use as well. So for kids that want to get a head start into a future career in the game industry, I highly recommend looking into those.
Absolutely. If I can just add to what Bob and Eric added to the conversation, you know, Minecraft is hugely, hugely popular with kids right now. And there's a great, very just vigorous modding community around the Minecraft ecosystem. And then there's a couple of educational tools that kids might want to look into to learn how to think about being game developers and game designers. One is Scratch, which is a piece of software coming out of MIT where students can kind of build their own code by creating, using little puzzle pieces that they can drag and drop. It's kind of a low threshold entry to programming. And if you want kind of the bottom of the barrel, absolutely easiest way to get into developing a game, I would recommend Twine, which you can find at twinery.org. And with that, you can create interactive fiction games, kind of like the old Choose Your Own Adventure books. And those have been really successful with some of my colleagues who do work with children and after school programs and clubs.
Matt, go ahead.
I was going to say to even maybe go a notch below Twine. I mean, you can even look at just paper, you know, paper and pencil, draw a board game, make a card game, cut out cards. And paper prototyping is a good way to, you know, make your own game. And you can think about the game more than how to build the stuff and the graphics. And that can be a very good way to get started.
Yeah, that's actually how I got started. And, you know, now I'm being paid to make games professionally. So, yeah, when I was 8 years old, my mom didn't want to buy me Mario Brothers, I think. And I made my own Mario Brothers just, you know, with some paper and creating a level of my own. So it's a very good way to start. And paper prototyping, like Eric was saying, is a technique that's actually used by big companies in the industry. So
with the emphasis in the workplace on technology, computers, the internet, how much would you say video games are helping kids pick up skills that they're going to need in the future in the job market?
Well, I think that's an it depends question. If you're purely consuming video games, then I don't know if I would say that that's really giving people the kinds of skills that they might need. But if you are then looking into how games are made, thinking about game design, trying to do it yourself, using tools like Twine or Scratch or some of the other tools that have been mentioned today, then that's really instilling some computational thinking skills in kids that are just absolutely paramount in today's society.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a really good answer. Only thing I would add to it is, if I'm a recruiter, I would look for people who have taken leading roles in online communities around video games, because I think Kurt Squire published on that, who is a professor at University of Madison, Wisconsin. We see that in the research, we see that when people start playing games, they gradually get better at the game, and the final point, they actually either become producers or they become community managers for the game itself, which has employment value in its own right, obviously. I mean, there are people who can either make something, like Matt was saying, but they could also turn into people who are good at leading teams or managing communities.
Yeah, Bob, we've been talking about the kids for the most part, but you've actually been doing studies on seniors and video games. So how can video games help seniors?
Yeah, that's actually, I failed to mention that earlier, but when you were talking about the social isolation, I actually just got back from the E3 Expo in L.A., where my team of students pitched their game, which is a game to reduce social isolation amongst older adults. So it's a game that's pretty much an open world in which you would you explore the world with other people, and you find these amazing surreal artifacts that you can take pictures of and describe and do all sorts of interesting interactions with. But that would be one example of how games can help in combating social isolation. In the research that I've been doing myself, there are a lot of different reasons why older adults play video games these days. The statistics tell us that it's about 40 million U.S. gamers that are over the age of 50 right now. If you make a projection of
how many? 40 million?
40 million already.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And if you look at the projections, it's going to be about 105 people by 2035. So, you know, about 20 years from now, that number is going to be doubled and more. So games over 50 are turning into a big thing. The industry is paying notice. The AARP is organizing student game design competitions and everything. So it is starting to gain some traction, and I believe 5 to 20 years from now, already a whole lot of older adults are playing, but it's only going to grow bigger and bigger and bigger, and there's definitely health benefits to take into consideration with that as well, among which there's the social connectedness that games can offer, but also just, you know, training your memory or doing some physical exercise in games that are a little bit more embodied.
So, Bob, as far as has there ever been any research or statistics on playing video games as far as helping prevent dementia or Alzheimer's?
Yeah, there's a lot of research that's done on that. I would say that the general consensus on it right now is that we need to do more research on it. but we have some positive preliminary results on it. At the same time, the brain training games that you would find online, the jury is pretty much still out on that. We don't have conclusive evidence to say that those things are actually effective. At this point in time, I would argue that most of the brain training games that you see out there are mainly marketing ploys that don't have empirical evidence that can really back up that these things are going to help you a whole lot. Of course, it's always good to do some exercises, even doing some math exercises and things like that. But in general, we need to do some more work in that field to actually say, like, okay, this is a game that will genuinely make a huge difference. But I believe that we will get there to that point, though, but we're just not right there yet.
So as far as whether video games are positive or negative, it sounds like there's a lot more research that needs to be done in that area.
Yeah, I would agree.
Matt, what's your thought on that? I mean, is anything conclusive at this point?
Well, as scholars, I think that Bob and Eric and I would probably all agree that nothing is conclusive. But,
if it was, we'd be out of work.
Exactly. But in terms of, whether video games are good or bad, again, it really comes down to how they're being used, who's using them, what their dispositions are, and what the ultimate outcome, the intended outcome is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One thing I would touch on is, we've talked a lot about the younger generation and the older generation, and a lot of my work actually falls in between. We've been doing a lot lately with training healthcare professionals, so not preparing people for the workplace, but once they get into the workplace, doing continuing education via games. So especially around the area of disaster preparedness, where, you can make a video game with a fire or a tornado or, some horrific event that, you know, this medical staff needs to respond to, and it's very easy to do in a game, whereas it might be difficult to do in real life. And I know in the manufacturing sector, you know, Ford, Boeing, Toyota, you know, they use a lot of this for, you know, using game tools to actually design products, review products, test drive the next great car before they build it. You know, architecture, you can do, you know, almost gameplay run-throughs of buildings that don't exist yet, and train people on maintenance and construction. And, you know, there's a lot you can do with games for actually applied corporate training in the middle of those, you know, the age ranges we've talked about.
And Eric, since you're the one who has the psychological background, what do you think of the idea of psychologists and game designers working together to create video games that actually have some therapeutic value to them?
I've seen a lot of positive impact in that area, even into the area of physical therapy. There's, you know, so much now with motion tracking and motion-based gaming and, you know, using your body as the game controller. And, you know, we talked about games as a motivational factor. Like, you do a task, you get a little reward, and it gives you a drop of dopamine, and you want to keep going, right? Sometimes physical therapy can be very difficult. So if you're, you know, physically moving and doing your exercises, and it helps you win a game and progress in the game and level up, you keep doing it and keep doing it, and you can actually improve your recovery time and make the process more enjoyable. And, you know, similar things with some neurological problems where you may have gait issues walking, and you can use video games to help people learn to walk better with their disability. You know, like Bob and Matt said, the jury is still a little bit out on the therapeutic value for, you know, mental issues or, you know, brain training, that kind of thing. But I like the potential, and I think it's a valid area of you know, pursuit, trying to figure that out. The other area I think that's really helpful for psychologists to work with game designers is on, you know, I guess more with the normal population of, you know, what is it that makes games fun? You know, understanding the psychology of play, the psychology of fun, or even, you know, basic things like usability and human-computer interaction, and, you know, how can we make a game easy for senior citizens to understand, even if they didn't grow up, you know, as digital natives, or, you know, those types of issues. I think psychology has a lot to say.
Well, Bob, Eric, and Matt, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you for having us. Pleasure.
University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor in Instructional Design and Technology in the College of Education, Criminal Justice, and Human Services, Dr. Matthew Schmidt. Miami University Professor in the College of Education, Health, and Society in the Armstrong Institute for Interactive Media Studies, Dr. Bob DeShooter. And Smale Center Director and an Armstrong Institute for Interactive Media Studies Instructor at Miami University, Eric Hodgson. Coming up, some great new perspectives in movies thanks to drones. How technology is changing the film industry. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.